I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. To be a king when kingdom comes. So you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody.
Hi, good morning. Welcome to the show. I had a little problem signing on. I really did. I am Brian. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the show. We are global. And we have a very special guest coming in today at 7:15. That'll be in about maybe 10 minutes. We're going to talk, he's a sheriff. And we're going to talk about the manhunt, the search for Vicky and Casey White. If you'd like to come on the show, this is the number that will get you in this show so you can ask some questions. It's 319-527-6099. 319-527-6099. That's the number that gets you in the studio. That's the number that we can hear your voice, and you'll be global. Title of the show today, Manhunt. The search for Vicky and Casey White. This is a true crime story that took nationwide headlines. But details you never heard before in Rick Singleton's new book, Manhunt. The search for Vicky and Casey White. Join us for this explosive interview. Again, I'm hoping that I can talk to Mr. Rick Singleton in about 10 minutes. But let me take you to the timeline of the capture of Vicky White and Casey White. They're not married. It was an 11-day escape and capture of Vicky White and Casey White. And here they are. You know, I think, let me see something here. I'm going to do something here that I haven't done before. Here we go. I'm going to take you through the timeline. The corrections official, Vicky White, and the prisoner, Casey White, they fled at a detention facility in Lauderdale County. This is in Alabama. This happened on April 29th. They were finally captured by authorities on Monday, May 9th. In Evansville, Indiana. In between those 11 days, the guard and the prisoner traveled more than 200 miles through at least four states with tens of thousands of dollars in cash to pay for their clothes, their wigs, their hotel rooms, and several other vehicles in an ultimately futile attempt to throw investigators off the chase. Yet the vehicles also offered police a roadmap of sorts that showed their movements within those 11 days. And the story in full starts well before their escape. See, what happened is they were dating back. This goes back to Casey White's imprisonment in 2015 and his meeting with Vicky White in 2020. That's how it goes back to. And my computer, and I have to apologize because my computer is acting up and it's freezing. It's freezing right now. I'm going to have to reboot my computer because I'm reading it off my computer. So that's throwing me off. But I'll still be on the air while I reboot my computer. So this is a true story. And like I said, I'm going to take you to the timeline if this damn computer can ever start working right. So I hope you join us. We have the sheriff coming in who was involved in the capture and who was there? And that's Rick. Rick's going to be coming in. But right now, and as Robin comes in, because my computer's not working, I'm done. I can't get into the studio. This interview is over. And I can't restart my computer. Sorry, guys. There's going to be I'm going to have to go down, do this interview today. This has never happened before. And I can't not go to a commercial. And we're live, so guess what? I am working on my computer as I speak. And guess what? I got it working. So I'm going to have to stall so I get it back up. So anyway, this is a true story. It's about betrayal. It's about love. About convicts. And it was in national headlines. And as soon as I get my computer back up, I can go back in and we can have an interview, because I was this close, and you can't see it, but only about an inch close of just saying, we can't do it, because there's no way I can get back in the studio. So if you're listening to me, I'm going back in the studio. It's going to take a couple of minutes for me to get back in that studio. And in the meantime, if you'd like to come on the show, contact Robin Cox, or you can go to mvpondemand.com, and there should be an interview link there. Just hit the interview link, and you'll be on the show. Let's see if I did it right, if I got this computer working, and we can do an interview. Let's see if I did this okay. You would not believe what I had to do to this computer really quickly, live on the air, with my little screwdriver. Very interesting. So right now in California, I'm calling you from California, it's 7:12. I'm going to see if I can get in the studio within 3 minutes, because Rick is going to come on in. So this is going to be interesting. I'm going to see if I can make it in, because right now my computer is spinning. Just spinning. So this is going to be fun. So hang on tight. We'll finish the interview, I promise you. So now I have to stall again. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go back into the computer. The computer's working, but it's spinning around. So I'm going to give it a couple of minutes, and we may have a short day today. Trust me. In the meantime, I want to talk about, before Rick gets in the studio, what I wanted to talk about was P. Diddy. And what's going on with P. Diddy right now, that dude's in some big-ass trouble. This reminds me of the singer who got in trouble, too, with the girls, the young girls, R. Kelly. This reminds me of R. Kelly's BS, what he went through. And so far, a lot of people are getting, their names are being thrown out there. T.J. Jakes, his name's being thrown out there. He's a big pastor. Cuba Jr. name is being thrown out there. There's going to be a lot of celebrity names going to be thrown out there. So this is going to be a big mess when they raided P. Diddy's place in Miami and they raided P. Diddy's place in Los Angeles. The charges are sex trafficking and having sex with minors. And Usher is going to be involved in this. He's going to be really involved in this, and it's going to be messy. It's going to be really messy. And Robin's in the studio. I think I'm in the studio. My God. Good morning, Robin. Can you see me? Because I'm having problems. Robin can't see me. Well, here we go. Let me see if I can get... I think I'm in the studio. I'm going through the timeline here. And we'll get it. We'll get it together, I promise you. We'll get it together. You're going to hear the story of these two people. God, she's a pretty girl. This guy looks like a doofus. Let's see if Robin's still around. Robin, are you there, kiddo? Robin?
Hello?
Hello? Oh,
yeah,
is this Rick?
Yes, this is Sheriff Singleton.
Hello, Sheriff. I'm sorry, I thought you were Robin. I saw the you're from Alabama too, so she has the same area code. How you doing, Sheriff Singleton?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, Brian?
I'm doing good. Sorry for the technical difficulty this morning, but I made it. I was just going through the timeline of the manhunt, and it was really, really interesting with Vicky and Casey White.
Yes.
So the timeline is very interesting. It's just like I don't know if I should go through it. I should let you say it, but I'll just do a little bit of intro so people know what we're talking about. These two people. How can an inmate control a guard or a correction officer? How can a correction officer fall in love with an inmate? She knows the deal. She knows what's at risk. So here's how they do it. This happened at 2015 through 2019. In 2015, Casey White carried out a crime spree that included a home invasion, carjacking. They had a police chase, according to the Marshals Service. In March 2016, he was indicted on 15 counts, and he was convicted on 7 of those counts in 2019, including attempted murder and robbery, according to Alabama records. This dude was sentenced to serve 75 years in prison. This is the dude. While serving out his sentence at the William E. Donaldson Correction Facility in Jefferson County, Alabama, Casey White allegedly confessed in 2020 to the 2015 stabbing death of a 59-year-old Connie Ridgway. How could this guard not know this? I mean, what's in their heads of saying, oh, he's single. Oh, we can have a life together. I mean, she looks like a really wholesome girl next door. He was charged with 2 counts of capital murder in her death. He was brought to the Lauderdale County Detention Center to be arraigned in a case in October 2020. This was not a good dude. After the jail, he came in contact with Vicky White. She was working as the assistant director for the corrections for Lauderdale County officials. Authorities also learned Casey White planned to escape the jail and take a hostage. And from there on, I'm going to have, I have the timeline here, but I'm going to have Sheriff Singleton talk about this. I saw it. It's nationwide news. And my brother's a CO, correction officer. We had him on last week. And people just don't know how people can get caught up in this mess. And Sheriff, thank you. You can take it from there. Sheriff, how long have you been a sheriff in Alabama, sir?
Well, I was sheriff for 8 years. Prior to that, I was the chief of police in Florence, Alabama for 16 years. My career covered a total of 46 years.
Mm-hmm.
So,
have you ever ran into anything like this in your whole career? Just something this bizarre?
Well, not anything this bizarre. Of course, you know, it's not uncommon for inmates to manipulate employees in prisons to bring contraband in and so forth. And we had some of that going on in our local facility. In fact, I arrested 4 of my detention officers over my 8 years as sheriff for doing just that, for bringing contraband in and giving it to prisoners. That's nothing new, but now, you know, something to this magnitude, is absolutely, I've never dealt with anything like this.
My God. Well, I am honored, to be honest with you, I'm honored to talk to you. Like I said, I have family members who is a CO, a correction officer. He just retired recently. But this is a book. You have a book coming out, Manhunt, The Search for Vicky and Casey White. Am I correct, Sheriff? This is a book?
Yes, sir.
What made you write this book? This incident must have had an impact on you. What made you say, okay, you know what? This is bizarre. I'm retired. You know, I got a lot of stories, but this particular case, this particular incident, what made you write about this, the manhunt, the search for Vicki and Casey White?
Yeah, the case, of course, grabbed national and international attention during the 11 days that they were on the run. I took calls from Australia and England and Europe, you know, from news outlets around the world. And at heart, I'm a history buff. I like history. And we have a notorious criminal here in Lauderdale County from the Civil War era, Tom Clark. And Tom Clark was arrested by the town marshal of Florence, Marshal Blunt. And it's legend. Well, it's a fact. We know for a fact that a mob broke him out of jail the night he was arrested, him and his two partners, and they lynched them. And the folklore is that he's buried under the main street in Florence because he always bragged that no one would ever run over him. So the townspeople allegedly buried him under the main street so people would run over him every day. We don't know if that's a fact or not. You know, we don't know if that's a fact or not. But this is probably because of the international attention it got, next to Tom Clark, the most notorious crime story in the history of our county. And I just wanted to document it so that future generations would have the facts about exactly what happened and not depend on hearsay or folklore about how this thing went down.
Wow. Wow, the stories you must have. You know this is made for movies. You know you got to take this to a movie, your book,
well,
because it's full of... Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I actually made two movies about the case already. Lifetime made a movie. Tubi made a movie. And there have been three documentaries and got another documentary coming out this summer on Netflix.
Okay. Are you involved in any of that at all?
I'm involved in the Netflix documentary. I was under contract with them. They're, you know, of course, they use footage from news stories and things and the others, but I do a one-on-one interview with them in the Netflix series.
Well, sir, it's unbelievable. This radio show is an internet show, and we're worldwide. We have great ratings. People are listening to us in Italy, Germany. Who cares? United States, we're really big in the United USA. We're really big.
Yeah.
Again, this story is about true crime, international manhunt, romance, betrayal, capture. I didn't want to go through the whole timeline because I didn't know if I would have took your thunder away, but this is unbelievable. It says, you know the timeline. Of course you know the timeline. You're the officer, you're the sheriff. But I'm just reading it right now, and I should have done my homework because I'm just looking at what you filled out, but then I'm looking at the story and went a little deeper. This woman, she sold her home on April 18th for $95,000. The total was well below the expected market value of $235,000. She had been living with her mother, Pat Davis, for about 5 years. Now, have you interviewed her mom? I mean, do we know what's going on with this woman's head? I mean, she looks like the girl next door, Sheriff. She really does. I would not put her in a situation where there'll be a felon, a criminal, a murderer, because like you said and like my brother said, these guys have a way to woo you, don't they? They have a way to get into your head, and before you know it, you're in trouble. And
happened with Vicki.
Yeah, if you could take me through the timeline, because I don't want to read it. If you could take me to the timeline, that would be cool. I'd like to hear it in your voice.
Well, actually, Casey was in our facility three times. The first time you mentioned earlier in 2020, when we got information that he was planning an escape at that time, we verified that by a search the cell and found the shanks that he had prepared supposedly to abduct a guard and to escape. So we immediately sent him back to Donaldson. He came back the following summer in 2021. We didn't have any problems with him on that particular visit. But that's when he solidified his relationship with Vicki. They had communicated some between his 2020 stay and the summer of 2021 by phone. When he returned to Donaldson in 2021, they conversed by phone almost 1,000 times over about a six-month period. It averaged 4 calls a day. And so they had really solidified that relationship during that time. He returned in February of 2022 to prepare for his trial on the Connie Ridgway murder. It was during this time that, of course, the escape plan was developed, and, you know, they left on April the 29th. And then they were gone 6 hours before we even realized they were missing. She had told her boss, the administrator, Jason Butler, that she was going to retire, and she walked in Thursday and handed in her retirement papers and said the next day, the 29th of April, would be her last day. So she left carrying him supposedly to the courthouse for an evaluation, a mental evaluation. Court found out that there was no such appointment scheduled. No judge had ordered such an evaluation. But they missed him at lunch. She had told him that when she dropped him off, she was going to get checked out because she wasn't feeling well. So the pretense was that she had gone home sick. You know, so no one really missed her for a while. And then at lunch, when they realized Casey White hadn't been brought back, that was the first red flag. And then by 3:30 that afternoon, they finally notified my office. I had just gotten back from Birmingham from a police academy graduation. And, you know, so we immediately launched a search and to try to find them and realize that they were gone. We found her car abandoned in a local parking lot. Looked at video, saw her leading him out of the facility, obviously unconcerned and you know, in violation of protocol and policy.
Right.
And it just went from there. And the first 7 days, we had absolutely nothing to go on. We did identify the car they left Florence in that weekend, that first weekend. But we didn't know that they had abandoned it before we even knew they were gone. So the following Friday, that car was found in Tennessee, about 2 hours north of Florence, and had been towed the day they left, as I said, by the sheriff's office up there. But from that lead, the marshals were able to find out what vehicle they switched into, got a VIN number on that vehicle, and you know, through the technology that's available to law enforcement, and especially the marshals, and they do a fantastic job at tracking down fugitives. You know, they locate that truck in Evansville, Indiana, and, of course, from there, the rest is history. They found them at the motel. There was a chase. The marshals rammed the White's car and ultimately pushed it over into ditch and captured Casey White, and during the process, Casey White was shot in the head and subsequently died from that wound.
Did she commit suicide or was she shot in the head? I thought she committed suicide.
Well, was ruled a suicide. You know, and I go into some of this in my book. I'm not convinced it was intentional. I think the gunshot was accidental, and you know, the circumstances. I mean, Casey had tried to get out of the car, and he saw a second marshal's vehicle headed toward him to ram him. He jumped back in the car. That marshal's truck rams the car and pushes it over into the ditch on the passenger side. Well, Casey's not strapped in, so he's laying on top of Vicky, and he gets wounded. The bullet grazes him across the back of the neck. I was just thinking that commotion. I think the weapon actually went off accidental. The nature of the wound, where the bullet went in, where it exited, it just doesn't add up to me. I've gone to a lot of suicide scenes over my career, and I've never seen anyone commit suicide this particular trajectory of the bullet. So I personally think it was accidental.
Now, there was rumors that this guy was a Nazi. I mean, he had SS and Confederate flag or something like this. Is this a rumor, or is there evidence that this guy might have, you know, I know we want to make people a bad boy, and we put racist, we throw that R word too often where it's not, it should not be applied. But did this guy show any signs of being a Nazi or a racist or anything like that?
There's evidence that he was a member of the white supremacist organization.
Oh, okay.
Based by some of his tattoos and so forth.
Wow. You're like a hero, man. I mean, talking to you, and I saw this. What was it? It felt like 3 months ago or something. It was recent. How long ago was this, sir? About 4 months ago?
23 months ago. The month tomorrow, the second anniversary, yeah.
Yeah, God, it seems so recent.
Yeah.
So I'm going over this. Were you the one who did the governor contact you, Governor Ivey, or since you were sheriff, did you have contact with the governor, and did he give you some help because of how this happened and they were not accounted for? Did you have any problems with the governor?
No, not at all. She was very supportive. Under Alabama law, the district attorney can request reward money, and our district attorney, Chris Connolly, reached out and got some reward money. And the Marshal Service also offered some reward money for information leaked or capture. And some of that reward money was paid out.
I know we can't find out what's going on and what was going on in Vicky's head. You're the professional sheriff. You deal with these convicts all the time. You know how they can sway a law official to do their bidding and, you know, smuggle contraband in the cells and everything. You must have this problem a lot. What do you think what's going on in her head? Nobody suspected Vicky doing this. I mean, for her to say, I'm going to go home sick and not come back, and they added like a, what was it, 4-hour head start? You said 4 to 6 hour head start on you?
Yeah, 6 hours.
And that was not suspicious about her taking him? I don't know. Help me, Sheriff. Help me with this.
Well, you know, there's a huge turnover in employment in the corrections facilities, especially, you know, at the day they left, we were 11 corrections deputies short. So we had a skeleton crew, and the hall had been on the job 2 months. So they're not going to question the assistant administrator. You know, she's their boss, and she tells them to go get bring him up. They're going to do it. So, you know, it's sort of in the book. I talk about the perfect storm. It, you know, obviously, you know, she was an employee, and that was a factor. But that there were several factors that enabled, you know, made this possible for her just to walk him right out of the jail, pretty much undetected. You know, some of it was policy issues that we addressed. The major problem was the job description as sheriff. I'd just given her too much authority and control over the transport of inmates because I trusted her. She had never given any of us any reason not to trust her. This was not the Vicky White we knew. Casey White is a master manipulator. He got in her head. I think he convinced her he was innocent of the Connie Ridgway murder, and she felt for him that he was being unjustly persecuted for something he didn't do, although he admitted he did it. And he just got in her head, you know, during the chase pursuit on May the 9th up in Evansville, Indiana, she dialed 911, according to Casey. And her reason for doing that was to try to reach out to me and, according to Casey, to apologize. That's the Vicky I know. You know, I was asked about the call that the rumor had gotten out that she had, tried to reach me. I wasn't told at the time why, but I told him, I said, the only reason I can think she wanted to call me was to apologize, because that's the Vicky White I knew. Vicky was a good employee. She was dedicated, and she had a weakness. Casey recognized that weakness and moved in on it and manipulated her and got what he wanted, and that was to get out of jail. That was his only motive.
Right. I mean, they had a lot of money. I mean, my God. And when he was arrested, Casey White referred to Vicky as his wife.
Yeah.
And he claimed he did not shoot her, so there's where the suicide thing, but you believe might be, you know, otherwise could have been something. I don't know. You might suspect he shot her, or you think the gun just went off and it was an accident, Sheriff?
Yeah, there's no question Vicky pulled the trigger. The gun was in her hand. The wound was her right side, which was the passenger side of the vehicle. She was sitting in the passenger seat. The gun was clutched tightly in her hand. The officers on the scene had to pry it from her hand. There's no question she pulled the trigger. The only question is, was it intentional or accidental? And personally, I think it was accidental.
Right. Because I heard rumors that they planned this to die together, and we're going to go through this together. I mean, you know, we hear rumors. I mean, I'm just listening to rumors. You know, you go online, you hear rumors and everything. But you know what was interesting? They had 4 handguns, a semi-automatic rifle, 3 magazines, wigs, and about $29,000 in cash in that car.
Yeah.
I mean, my God. And, you know, don't you wonder, Sheriff, that, you know, they were staying at this motel. They stayed there for, 14 days they were supposed to be staying there. Wouldn't you think the hotel guy kind of would get suspicious or something? I mean, you hear about this all the time. I mean, you got this person, they're going to stay there for 14 days in probably some flea bag motel. It wasn't no Holiday Inn or anything like that. It was probably one of those our hotel or motels. I would think that, did you guys question the guy at the motel? Did they, you know, did you see any, why didn't you call the police or anything like that? Or you didn't question him? Or did you question Vicky's mother saying, what mental illness did this one have? And I just want to know how your questioning went and where did it led you to. And if you found any more deep secrets about Vicky, because you just said it's not the Vicky you knew. So it might have been something you missed. Was there any investigation regarding the background of her family or anybody else?
Yeah, her family, they're great people, just outstanding people, and they were so taken back by this and caught off guard like the rest of us. They had no idea that she was planning to pull this off. The motel, you know, the marshals and the Evansville Police Department and the sheriff's office up there interviewed the motel owner. You were correct about the facility, and you know he actually had never even seen them. They hired a homeless guy to go in and rent the room for them. But they had been there about 3 days, I guess, when this happened. I think they checked in on Tuesday, and this happened the following Monday. So they'd been there about a week, I guess. But she had been divorced for over 20 years, and gotten engaged one time during that time, but her fiance was killed in an automobile accident before they were married. And she was vulnerable. You know, she was lonely, and Casey paid her some attention and paid her some compliments and, got into her head. And this wasn't the first time something like this happened, and it'll happen again, you know. That's the fear of the beast.
Yeah, yeah. And this goes to tell me there's still a lot of people are saying, why are we having women COs, correction officers, working in a men's prison? Why are we doing this? How many, and reverse, how many men COs are working in a woman's prison? What is the ratio, Sheriff?
I really don't know. In our particular case, half the corrections officers or more were female. It's a real challenge for corrections to recruit corrections officers. It's a very demanding job. It's a stressful job. It's a dangerous job. I used to tell the people we'd hire, I said, the first day on the job, they're going to test you. They're going to try to see if they can manipulate you, and you need to be prepared mentally, for that to happen. Because if it's going to happen, and more likely it's going to happen on your first shift. Even with that warning, I had 4 officers that, gave in and to the manipulation, and, they threatened them, they, curse them, they threatened their families, everything under the sun to get them to do what they want them to do.
Damn.
They're really the heroes of the criminal justice. I have the utmost respect and admiration for the people in the corrections field.
You guys are the unsung heroes. I mean, like I said, I have family who was a correction officer here. I'm in California, and he did a little stint at San Quentin and Folsom, and he's my little brother, to tell you the truth. And, I mean, I didn't think he had that kind of mentality. You would have to have some kind of mentality to be a correction officer. If you had to put down on paper the characteristics for me to hire you as a correction officer, what would they be? What kind of person would be a good correction officer?
Well, you've got to, have the kind of personality that you stand your ground, because these guys are going to try everything to manipulate you. And you've got to let them know. My first job in law enforcement was a corrections officer in the county jail. My training consisted of working three shifts with a veteran corrections officer, and at the end of that third shift, he told me, he said, I'm going to tell you one thing, and if you don't hear anything else I've said, you listen to what I'm about to tell you. He said, the first chance they get, they're going to test you and see if you're going to run this jail or if you're going to let them run it. And the very first morning by myself, I was tested. And we could do things we couldn't do now. I put the food tray in for breakfast that first shift by myself. It come flying out of the pigeonhole, bounced off the wall, food went everywhere. The guys in the cell block, causing a ruckus. They weren't going to eat. They demanded this. They demanded that. And so I asked them if anybody wanted their food, and nobody spoke up. So I said, well, you're not getting any, and I shut the door. Now, if I did that today, I'd have to.
Really?
But the next morning, I asked them if they wanted breakfast, and they said, yes, sir. So, you got to have a strong personality to work in that environment. And you got to be fair, but you've got to be firm. It's a very challenging job. There's no question about it.
I cannot even fathom. And you've been there, Sheriff. I mean, my God, you're, like I said, it's like talking to you, sir. It's like talking to a hero for what you did and how you handled this, and the political pressure with the governor, I'm sure, and people are knowing the press was leaking. They were gone for, like, what you said, 11 days maybe? So was the press already on this before you captured them?
Of course, we called a press conference that first night, the Friday evening, mm-hmm. the 29th, and put their pictures out and the vehicle description of her patrol car, because at first we hadn't found it. And, we located the patrol car pretty quick then. And then we got a lead on Saturday night. The next night, her phone, what the marshal called her bad girl phone, they found a throwaway phone that she had, and it was a phone she had used to contact him in prison that nobody knew she had. And they found the paperwork storage building that Saturday morning when they searched it. So they got the number to it, and it pinged up in around where the Ford Edge was abandoned the Saturday night. So I now believe that was a legitimate lead, but it was a very remote rural area, a lot of woods, and it was like looking for a needle in a haystack trying to find them up there. And by then, they were in a different vehicle. We didn't even know about the Ford Edge then, so we didn't know what they were in. But I think that was a legitimate lead. But I told the chief deputy on the way back from Tennessee that night, I said, if we don't catch them in the next day or so, I said, the national media is going to be on top of this. And when Sunday night, my first contact with the national media, and Monday morning, they were all in Florence.
Mm. Wow. And you're in Alabama. They got caught in Indiana. Am I correct?
Yes. It's about 5 miles. 5 hours due north of Florence, right there, Evansville, Indiana, just right across the Kentucky state line.
Now, when you get the call on radio, somebody spotted them, okay? You got a lead, somebody spotted them. You're going to this, to where they are. Tell me what goes through a human being on this. You know, this guy is dangerous. He was in for murder. You got one of yours. And you guys are still, your head's going crazy because one of you guys is involved in this. So when you're going to try to apprehend, you're not thinking about apprehending these people. Are you thinking about killing these people? I mean, let's just be honest that these are dangerous people now. We're not thinking about, okay, let's arrest these people. What goes through your head on the manhunt? I'd like to know this. I mean, I'd like to be inside your head and you go, okay, one of ours did this. This guy's dangerous. We got this, he could kill somebody. They stop at a liquor store and they could rob a liquor store. A lot of things must be going through your mind. So what do you do, Sheriff? You get the call. We got a lead. What happens at this point?
Well, law enforcement, you always prepare for the worst and hope for the best. And, knowing Casey White's history, he had gotten in gunfights before. He had shot a woman trying to carjack her car back in 2015 over in, actually in Giles County, Tennessee, just right across the Alabama state line. And so we knew he was dangerous. We knew they were armed. And we knew that, that they had more or less indicated they'd go out in a blaze of glory. My concern was, of course, everybody out there that might come in contact with them, but I knew eventually law enforcement was contact with them, and I was really concerned for my fellow law enforcement officers that might be in that position when they were located, for their safety. And we just, you know, you just hold your breath and hope for the best. And of course, the marshals were aware. That's why they rammed their car, you know, and took the measures. Excuse me. Took the steps they felt necessary to make sure that didn't happen, to get the upper edge on them. And thankfully, you know, I hate and regret that Vicki lost her life in this, you know, but it could have been much, much worse.
Oh, my God. I can't imagine, man. I can't imagine. You know, after this, and how many people, law enforcement, were involved? Did they call it, since they went across state lines, did the FBI get involved, or was it just, I mean, the Indiana police, the sheriff got involved?
Yeah.
It's a manhunt going. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, the FBI did initially because, you know, we weren't sure. At first, we didn't know if she'd been kidnapped, you know, and overpowered and taken hostage or what. So the FBI was involved in it at some point, you know, for a while. But primarily it's U.S. Marshal and their fugitive task forces. We had the Gulf States Regional Task Force that was the lead agency in the to try to locate and recapture them. And then the Marshal's Task Force out of that part of the country, up out of Michigan, I think, assisted when we found them in their jurisdiction. And the marshals pretty much took the lead on the search. You know, local law enforcement, especially a small sheriff's office in Alabama, usually don't have the resources to do a national manhunt. And it's great having partners like U.S. Marshals. I actually had a deputy assigned to the U.S. Marshals task force. And so, you know, matter of fact, I had him notify them with less than 2 hours after we found out they were gone because I knew we were going to need their help.
Unbelievable. Now, what happened to him? Well, okay, she's gone now. She coroner took her. I know you did the investigation on her, or there was a coroner investigation, I'm sure. Now, what happened to him? So you took him in custody. Did he go back to Alabama? Did he go back to the same jail? Did they keep him in Indiana? What happened to him? We're talking about Casey White.
Yeah, he waived extradition, and we picked him up in less than 24 hours after he'd recaptured, returned him to Lauderdale County to go before the judge for an arraignment on the escape charge, which we did that night about 10:30. The arraignment lasted about 15 minutes. He was put back in the car and transported immediately back to Donelson Prison, and that's where he's been to this day.
Did you ever interview him, Sheriff? Did you ever talk to him? I know you're writing a book and you have, you know, I know maybe at how long after this incident happened that you decided to say, you know, I'm retired now. I'm going to sit back. I'm going to go over this. And how did this affect you? I mean, I don't know much about you. Are you a family man? So you don't have to say anything because you don't want to be compromised. I understand it. But I'm just wondering how a person can have a nice family, deal with the nice family, deal with the nice neighborhood after they go through something like this. Did this affect you psychologically that you had nightmares or you couldn't shake it? You had to see a psychiatrist? I mean, I know you're professional, but you're still a human being. So did this case really affect you mentally?
Well, you know, I lost a lot of sleep during those 11 days, and I breathed a big sigh of relief once they were recaptured. I don't know, you know, after being in law enforcement 46 years, I used to tell my jail administrator when issues would come up, I said, you just got to, you know, just let it grow like water off a duck's back. You know, I guess being in a 26 years and having to deal with personnel issues and major crimes and those kind of things and having to deal with the media, I guess I just sort of developed, you know, an immunity, I guess, if you would, from letting it affect me like
that
would. Sleep deprivation for those 11 days. I was worn down and wore out. But mentally, I mean, you know, I've like you said, you know, we just, law enforcement officers just have to learn to cope. And after 46 years, learned that pretty well.
46 years. I am talking to, I'm going to call you a hero, tell you too. I'm talking to Sheriff Rick Singleton. The book is called Manhunt, A Search for Vicki and Casey White. And as you heard, I'm sure there's a Netflix movie and there's some other movies you have heard. Did this ever appear on Dateline? This is the kind of story that would appear on Dateline, you know, and they take it by minute. Did it ever
Documentary on and CW did a documentary on it, produced by News Nation. And then Netflix has got one coming out this summer. The movie, one of the first movies on Tubi that come out in October after this happened, that April, and then the Lifetime movie came out in the spring of, I think, of 21 last year sometime. But, as I said, the book, I just wanted to share the story. There was a lot of interest in this story, and, you know, it's available, of course, on Amazon or from any bookstore.
Right. Right. Please tell it. Let us know how we could pick up this book. And let me ask you a question before you do it. Do you have the rights? I know this is a public thing, but did you have to secure the rights to tell the story? So, through your eye. Go ahead, sir.
It's my story. I didn't have to secure any rights. I did have to secure permission to use the photos that were used in the book, because most of the photos come from news coverage, and some of them come from public. Some of them from the jail and so forth that are public record. But the ones that weren't public record, I obviously had to get permission to use. So.
Is this your first book, sir? Sheriff Singleton, is this your first book?
Well,
now, it's a pain in the ass. It's a pain in the ass. We talk to authors all the time. I mean, you must have pulled your hair out just to get this into print. Or did you do self-publishing? Or did you have a publishing agent to help you with the book, Sheriff Singleton?
I self-published it on Amazon, and I've never thought of myself as being an author and writing a book, but when I got through with it, like I tell my coworkers that I've worked with, it's really just like a long police report. Police officers write reports every single day, and I said it's just a really long police report, so that amounts to.
Well, I'm glad you made it through, man.
First person, it's told from my perspective in first person. And the beginning of the book's a little of the background of Casey and Vicky and the Connie Ridgway murder, and then it gets into the planning for the escape, and then the next section deals with the 11 days that they were on the run. And the final chapters of the book are just my personal reflections on what happened, how it happened. You know, there's always that question, how in the world somebody just walk out of jail? And that's the first question. I try to answer that question in the latter part. I said earlier, there were several factors, and I try to go into those factors about how this was able to happen in the first place. And, I've gotten good reviews. I've had several reviews, and I think it's got a 4.4, 4.5 rating on Amazon. So.
You do have you got a lot of 5-star ratings right here. You got a 70% 5-star, 4-star. You got some good ratings here. The book is on sale on Amazon. You guys get the book. $16.95, sir, Sheriff. It's $16.95 the book is sold for.
Right.
Now, do you personally, if somebody buys a book, let's say I wanted to buy the book. I mean, look, the cover, by the way, I got to give you kudos. I mean, I have interviewed a lot of authors, and sometimes they have crappy covers. Your cover is a great cover. I'm just going to tell you that. I'm not kissing your ass. I'm just telling you it's a great cover. Manhunt, The Search for Vicky and Casey White. The good, the bad, the ugly. You got all that. You got it on Kindle for $4.99. The hardcover is $28.74. Everything is good. Everything is real good. You know what? I'm going to buy it. What I see here, you did a great job. You really did a good job for your first book. And let me see. There's a couple of books on her. White Light. Well, I'm not going to talk about the other people. Don't listen to the other people. Don't read their book. Get the real book, Manhunt, The Search for Vicky and Casey White, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. That's the book. Forget about the rest of the crappy. This is Sheriff. This is Sheriff Rick Singleton coming from the sheriff. So if you're going to get the book, get it from him. Thank you so much for coming in the studio. This is the time, if we didn't cover anything that you would like to cover, tell people how to get a book, or maybe an autograph book. You know, some of my authors autograph a book, which is more expensive, by the way. You got about 5 minutes, sir. Whatever you want to talk about or something we didn't go over, please let us know and tell people how to get a hold of you or buy the book. It's your
time. Well, actually, when we finish this podcast, I'm going to a book signing at 10 o'clock here and locally. And, you know, I wanted to save the story, preserve the story for the historical significance that it is. And, you know, as I said, I hope people enjoy it, that buy the book. And everyone out that locally that's bought it, that's said anything to me that I run into, they've really enjoyed it. It's a quick read. It just takes maybe 2 or 3 hours to read the book. It's 117, 118 pages. So it's an easy read. It'd be a great book to read on an airplane flight somewhere. You know, and you probably read it during the course of the flight. But, you know, the story is interesting to me because I lived it. And, you know, it's just I got a lot of questions about it, and I thought, well, the easiest way to share the story is to put it in writing. So that's what prompted me to decide to write the book about the story and to preserve it for future generations so that, you know, I wish we had documentation about whether Tom Clark really buried under Tennessee Street or not. If Marshall had committed that, we'd know for a fact, but we'll never know unless we dig up the whole street, and I don't see that happening. So, but yeah, hope you buy it and enjoy it, and
thank you
for having me on. I've enjoyed the conversation.
Oh, I enjoyed this too. I'm going to give you a little something. Here you go. This is for you. How's that? There you go. Sheriff Rick Singleton's in town. New sheriff in town. No tomfoolery going on in there. You don't mess around with the sheriff. Sir, thank you so much. I had a great time with you. Please come back. I got a feeling you got some other stories, and it's not the end of you writing a book, because it's like a tattoo. Once you start writing a book, you're going to write another one. You got another thought. You got another story. It's just like that. Are you thinking about writing another book? Because this is over.
Well, no, not really. I haven't given it any thought. I've had a lot of people ask me. Some of my buddies at the coffee shop tell me my next book needs to be The Lighter Side of Law Enforcement, because there are a lot of funny things happening in the field of law enforcement.
Well, thank you so much. Manhunt, The Search for Vicky and Casey White. Sheriff Rick Singleton. This is his book, his story. Get it. Thank you, Mr. Rick Singleton. Thank you, Sheriff. Thank you for coming by. Anytime you want to come in the studio and you have an update, please do. I think we have a question. Would you like to take one question, sir? We got a lot of people in the studio. One person may have a question for you. Just one? Is that okay? Her name is Patricia Overland. Pat, do you have a question for the sheriff, Sheriff Rick Singleton?
Yeah, actually, I do. I mean, how is it that she and he were able to converse that long and develop a relationship without anybody knowing?
Well, we've got video footage of them passing notes. Of course, all this is after the fact. That we found the video footage, but the big thing was that burner phone that she had purchased, and that's the phone that she used. Of course, she used fake IDs you know, when she called into the prison. He was in prison. She was up here, and 4 phone calls a day. I figure something like good morning and good night and a couple of phone calls in between, but, you know, they maintain that relationship with the phone.
That's amazing to me.
It's amazing, and you know, the question we ask ourselves, and I know everybody else too, is how in the world could they get by, you know, go undetected for so long? But she knew the system. She was employed by the system. She was a second in command. She had the control over the inmates. She had control over the employees, and you know, she could manipulate things within the jail itself to get things done that she wanted to get done. And that like I said earlier, it's back on me as her job description. I just gave her too much authority and control into one person, and really didn't have sufficient checks and balances, and that's on me.
Oh man!
Oh my!
Wow, you have to live with that.
Well, it's truly an interesting story. Truly interesting.
It is, isn't it? Manhunt, the search for Vicky and Casey White. Sheriff is in town. Sheriff Rick Singleton, man. I want to thank you. We got like 8 people with their hands up. No, this is crowd control. The sheriff got things to do. Get the book. They love you, Sheriff. They love you.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
You're welcome. Have a great day. Good luck in your signing. You're welcome. And we'll be right back talking about politics and more law and order. My God, I'm talking to a hero, guy. I mean, I would love to shake his hand. I would just go to Alabama just to shake his hand. You know that? In fact, I would take a trip. If I knew that he was signing, still signing in 6 months from now, I would go to Alabama. I really would. Like I said, I have family who's a CO, and that's not a happy job. It's not a happy job. He came on 2 weeks ago. You guys heard him about how people could get compromised, and you're thinking, how can a woman get so cuffed? And I don't know. I'm a sexist. I don't know why they put women in men's jails. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, look at me going off like this. Wow. Manhunt, the search for Vicky and Casey White. We just had Sheriff Rick Singleton, on here, and a movie on Netflix is coming out soon, and it's good to talk to a sheriff. That's the first time I talk to a sheriff. I'm not afraid he's going to shoot me. All right, Bryce. All right. Let me see your hand, partner. Here you go, Sheriff. Easy, boy. Easy. You know why we stop you, Brian? No, I don't. You were swerving. Have you been drinking? No. Are you sure? Yes. Well, I smell alcohol. Not me. You mind if we search your car? I know my rights. Get your hand on the steering wheel, partner. Okay. And let's have the drug dog. Not the drug dog. Okay, I give up. I confess. That damn drug dog. Not the drug dog. Wow. Good question, Pat. We have like 5, 6. I can't keep the man. He has a book signing, So I made sure that one of us. And there you go. Listen to this, Pat. Rick Singleton, Sheriff Rick Singleton in town. Don't mess with the sheriff. That's right. He'll rest your ass. He's a hero. 46 years in law enforcement, man. Man.
Boy, that would turn you against people after a while.
He would have to be tough. Like you said, it has to rub off his back. I mean, what he has seen, what his eyes have seen that we would not see. And being put in position in a situation like that, my God. And to take care of it. I'm looking at the picture of this Vicky and Casey White. I mean, she seemed like the girl next door, honest to God. He's a good-looking guy. You should see the cover. Go to Amazon right now. Go to Amazon and put in Manhunt. Let me see here. Go in there and put in Manhunt to search for Vicky and Casey White. Check him out. Great reviews, too. 5-star. 5-star, baby. Let me see. I should have went a little further. I feel so bad. And let me just read what it says here. I'm going to read in my Western voice. Remember what I said. I got my Clint Eastwood in my head. Dun 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 dun. I should be locked up. He should not be around public. Let me see. Mm-mm-mm, 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 mm-mm-mm. You know, I was going to be a cop at one time, Pat. You think I would be a good cop? I don't know. I think I'd be a good cop. I think I'd be a good cop. Yeah. But I'm going to read this right here. But I'm going to read it in my Clint Eastwood head. I'm inviting you. Clint Eastwood lives in my head rent-free. That's what he does. Everybody else has to pay. And here we go. Come on, Clint. Give me this. Yeah. Lucky? Well, do you, punk? Yeah. Wah, wah, wah. I don't know if you can still hear it, but Sheriff Singleton began high law enforcement career as a reserve deputy with the Lauderdale County Sheriff's Office in 1972. Yeah. Yeah, Clint lives in my head rent-free. Yeah, don't mess with me. I'll squint my eyes and make you run. But here's a little background. He was sworn in as a deputy in 1973. In 1978, he ran unsuccessfully for the office of sheriff at the age of 26, making him the youngest candidate to seek the office in the history of the county. After the election, he continued his career with the Florence, Alabama Police Department, where he quickly rose through the ranks, being appointed chief of police in 1996. He was sworn in at 73, and he became the chief of police in 96. So he was already working, 22 years maybe, in law enforcement at the time before he became chief of police. He retired as chief in 2012 after serving more than 32 years with the department. Guy's a real deal. He's getting my Clint. Yeah.
Sheriff Singleton's riding in town.
That's right.
Hello?
The real deal. Get the book.
Get the book. Yeah. Yeah. Pat, do you like American Westerns? Do you like American Westerns?
I used to like watching Clint Eastwood and them.
Yeah. Clint was cool, wasn't he? He said little words. He had that cigar, that little poncho, that little hat. It made those Canadian women go, oh, my, I like American boys. Woohoo! Yeah. You know, Pat, back in the day, if we were back in a Western town and you're in a Western, you would probably be a saloon. Would you be a saloon girl, or would you be one of those? You'd be one of those dancing in the saloon. Hello, boys. Ba 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 ba. Da 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 da. Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I would live long back in the Western days because I'm always getting into trouble. I would go in the bar and just saying something. You know, there was a joke. I have this joke that nobody laughs at. Not one, but Pat, you tend to laugh at me, so I might get a laugh out of you. Want to hear the joke, Pat? Want to hear the joke? It's a Western joke.
Yep.
Okay. Nobody laughs at this. Let's see if you do. This guy is in the Western days. So this dog walks into a bar, and the dog gets up on a stool, and he asks for the bartender. And the bartender looks at the dog and says, we don't serve dogs here, partner. And then he shoots the dog in the foot. So the dog limps out of the saloon. His foot is bloody. And the dog gets pissed off, so he goes to the blacksmith, and he gets a gun, he gets a holster, he gets a hat. He goes back to the saloon. He sits at the stool. He looks around, and he says to the other bartender, "I'm looking for the bartender who shot my paw. Who shot my paw?" Yeah. You get it? The bartender who shot his paw, the foot, the dog.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. No, you know what? Okay. I'm going to go back to Clint. Yeah, baby. Yeah.
I had a brain fart there, you know, like, and my brain quit. It does that every once in a while.
I understand completely. I'm glad you hit your weed in honor of Sheriff Singleton, Rick Singleton, because he's a good guy. He could be on the phone and he's like a weed psychic, like, I'm smelling some weed that's not legal. He would confiscate that volcano, and he would use Mr. Fred as a suspect. That cat looks weird.
Oh, I'm legal as heck. I used to have a prescription for it.
Yep, you got a prescription? Mm-mm.
Yeah.
In 1978, he ran for, we already said that, he rose to chief of police. He retired as chief in 2012 after serving more than 32 years with the department. He ran for sheriff again in 2014. Now, wait a minute. I should have asked him that. If he retired in 2012, he ran for sheriff again in 2014. Interesting. How could I miss this little tidbit here? Little nugget. He was winning both the primary and the general election by an overwhelming margin. He ran for a second term unopposed, of course, the first candidate for office of sheriff to ever do so. He retired after a second term in 2023, after a career that spanned five decades. Wow. Sheriff Singleton received a master's degree in criminal justice from the University of Alabama, Roll Tide, in 82. He also graduated from the 138th session of the FBI National Academy. Really? The Law Enforcement Executive Department Seminar and the National Sheriff Institute. This guy's good. He and his wife, Peggy, they were married in 1976, and they both have two daughters. Scarlett Singleton notes, who is an attorney. His daughter's an attorney, of course. And Stephanie Singleton. Can you imagine dating his daughter? I can imagine going up and knocking on the door. Hello, Sheriff Singleton. My name is Bryce. I'm coming to pick you. I'm going to go out with your daughter. He would shoot me right there. It's not a good question. He just wait right here, and he would shoot my ass right on the doorstep. Not even asking any question. Bury my bones in the backyard. You'll never be found, boy. Never. Clint Eastwood is paying rent in my head. Not paying rent. He just stays there. Yeah, look at that. He's a bad mother. Shut your mouth. I'm talking about Clint. Pat, we're going to go for a little break. I'm going to get a little coffee. It's time to play the game. It's time to play the game, Pat. Okay. It's time to play the game. Pat loves this. Here's how the game works. I would read some lyrics. Pat has to guess what song it belongs to. And if she's right, she gets a kudo. Yay! And I'll tell you what, you got to play.
It, eh?
we got, we'll, Well, we'll play for something. We'll play for something. I'll tell you what. If you get it right, let me see if they won the lotto. Hold on. Let me see if it was won yesterday. I'll buy you 2 lottery tickets if you get it right. Let me see if they won anything won yesterday. Let's see what's up to. Oh my God, the Powerball is up to $935 million, Pat. And they're going to draw Saturday. $935 million, almost $1 billion. If you get this right, Pat, 2 tickets. 2. You could be a millionaire by answering a question. You're just doing your thing. Wow. Wow. And then you can go to the press and go, you know, all I had to do was go on Brian's show and you can become a millionaire. That's right. That's right. And we have, and being on the show, we have given away already $30,000 worth of prizes. Nobody won.
Really?
Yeah. Nobody won. You had to be like the 5th caller. Nobody won. Nobody won that. But let's concentrate for Pat. This is worth 2 tickets in the lotto. Wow. Pat, you could win this. Somebody's going to win, and it could be you. It could be you, because somebody's going to win this. Yeah, why not? Why not you? Okay, now here's where it goes. We're going to do the lyrics. Pat has to guess what it is. I'll give you a hint. Law enforcement. Law enforcement. 19, probably 75. I'll guess 75. Okay?
Okay.
2 tickets. Everybody give Pat good vibrations here. 930. This is worth $935 million. This is what it's worth. This could be it.
I see.
Even Mr. Fred saying, I'm not going to say a word. I'm going to be very quiet because I want Mama to win. I get a cat tree if she does. All right, $935 million, Pat. This is what it's going for. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. He was on his way home from Candletop. Been 2 weeks gone. He thought he'd stop. You know, at Webb's and have him a drink before he went home to her. Andy Warlord said hello. He said, hi, what's doing? Woe said, sit down. I got some bad news. It's going to hurt. He said, I'm your best friend, and you know that's right. But your young bride ain't home tonight. Since you've been gone, she's been seeming that Amos boy, Seth. Well, he got mad, and he saw red. Andy said, boy, don't you lose your head, because to tell you the truth, I've been with her myself. Pat?
I know it, but the way you read it,
Yes.
It ruins the way my brain perceives it.
Pat, it's worth $935 million. 2 tickets to the dance, Pat. 2 tickets to the dance. I'll give you another
verse.
Because I'm not going to read the chorus. I'm going to give you another verse. Are you ready? Here we go. Well, Andy got scared and he left the bar. Walking on home, but he didn't live far. See, Annie didn't have many friends, and he just lost him one. He said brother thought his wife must have left town, so he went home and finally found the only thing Papa had left him, and that was a gun.
I know this song. I know this song, and I can't get it. I can't hear the tune in my
million.
Head.
935 million, Pat. Two tickets to the dance. Okay, I'll read you another verse.
Yeah, but I can't hear
you
the
could
sound
do it.
In my head.
You could do it. All right. All right. He went off to Andy's house, slipping through the backwoods, quiet as a mouse. He came upon some tracks too small for Andy to make. He looked through the screen at the back porch
you've
door.
You've lost me.
Stay with me. And he saw Andy lying on the floor in a puddle of blood, and he started to shake. Stay with me. Don't give up. Well, the Georgia Patrol was making their rounds, so he fired his shot just to flag him down, and a big belly sheriff grabbed his gun and said, Why'd you do it? And the judge said guilty in a make-believe trial, slapped the sheriff on the back with a smile, and said, supper's waiting at home, and I got to get to it. Pat.
Oh, I know it, but I can't hear the tune.
This is the last part of it, because I won't sing the chorus. Here it is. Well, they hung my brother before I could say the tracks. Well, they hung my brother before I could say the tracks he saw while on his way to Andy's house and back that night were mine. And his cheating wife had never left town. And that's one body that'll never be found. See, little sister don't miss when she aims her gun.
Oh, I know this song, and I can't tell you the name. I can't tell you the name. You're going to have to play it because I haven't been able to hear it in my head very good.
Do you know the song? Do you know the song?
I do, but I can't tell you the name. I'm just...
Two tickets. $935 million, Pat. I can hear people say,
"Oh yeah, the pressure is really helping." The pressure is helping.
It's really
so
helping.
Much.
Okay. I'll do one more time. I'll try. Sting is not going to help, but it might. He was on
Brilliant.
His way home. Yeah.
You remember I have brain damage, don't you?
I know. I do, too, so we can relate to each other. I sing to people with brain damage, and they get the song. That's what I tour for, people with brain damage and who are handicapped people, mentally ill. That's why I'm touring. Here we go. Been 2 weeks gone, he thought he'd stop at Webb's and have him a drink before he went home to her. And Andy said, Andy Warhol said, hello, he said. And then he said, hi, what you doing? Wolf said, sit down. I got some bad news. It's going to hurt. He said, here we go. He said, I'm your best friend, and you know that's right. But your young bride ain't home tonight. Since you've been gone, she's been seeing that Amos boy, Seth. Well, he got mad, and he saw red. And he said, boy, don't you lose your head, because to tell you the truth, I've been with her myself.
Oh, I know this song, Brian. It's terrible. I can't come up with the name.
Law enforcement. You got it. Well, Andy got scared and he left the bar. Walking on home because he didn't live far. See, Andy didn't have many friends and he just lost him one. Brother thought his wife must have left town. So he went home and finally found the only thing Papa had left him, and that was a gun. And he went off to Andy's house.
Oh, boy.
And slipping through the backwoods, quiet as a mouse, came upon some tracks too small for Andy to make. He looked through the screen at the back porch door. He saw Andy lying on the floor in a puddle of blood, and he started to shake.
Oh, I know this. I know this. I just can't get it.
Well, they hung my brother before I could say the tracks he saw on his way to Andy's house.
Is it the day something happened? The name of the song, the day.
Yeah, that's the title. The day something happened in something. That's the title.
The title is the day. Something died.
You're almost there. You're almost there. Don't give up. You're almost there. Pat, this is about two tickets, $930 million, $35 million, Pat, two tickets to the dance. This is the last time. Here we go. You're almost there. You got it. You got it. Here we go.
The day Dixie died? No.
I don't know who Dixie is, but okay.
It's down south.
Well, Andy.
Down south.
Yeah, well, Andy got scared and he left the bar, walking on home because he didn't live far. See, Andy didn't have many friends and he just lost him one. Brother thought his wife must have left town, so he went home and finally found the only thing Papa had left him, and that was a gun. And Andy went off to Andy's house, sipping through the backwoods quiet as the mouse came upon some tracks too small for Andy to make. He looked through the screen of the back porch door.
Oh, Brian, I give up.
He saw Andy on the floor in a puddle of blood, and he started to shake. All right, Pat. Oh, you're so close. You're so close. We're reading for you. Hang on, man. This will give you some inspiration. Yeah, Clint. Yeah. Clinton will help you. Yeah. Should you give up?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. All right. Well, it's not that somebody killed Dixie, but it is this. And we'll be right back with more. We'll be right back with more stories. We're going to talk about P. Diddy, and we're going to talk about other stuff. And Pat, you're going to kick yourself when you hear it. And here's the song, and we'll be right back.
He was on his way home from Candletop. Been 2 weeks gone, and he thought he'd stop at Webb's and have him a drink before he went home to her. Andy Wolo said hello, and he said, hi, what's doing, Wolo? Said, sit down, I got some bad news, it's gonna hurt. He said, I'm your best friend, and you know that's right, but your young bride ain't home tonight. Since she's been gone, she's been seeing that ain't a boy since. Well, he got mad, and he saw red, and Andy said, boy, don't you lose your head, got to tell you the truth. I've been with her myself. That's the night that the lights went out in Georgia. That's the night that the haunted innocent man. For well, don't trust this old and old backwoods southern lawyer. Cause the judge in the town got blood stains on his hands. Well, Andy got scared and left the bar. Walking on home cause he didn't live far. See, Andy didn't have many friends and he just lost him one. Brother thought his wife must have left town. So he went home and finally found the only thing Papa had left him, and that was a gun. He went off to Andy's house. Skipping through the backwoods quiet as a mouse, came upon some tracks too small for Andy to make. At the back porch door, and he saw Andy lying on the floor in a puddle of blood, and he started to shake. Well, the Georgia patrol wasn't making their rounds, so he fired a shot, took the flag on down, and a big belly sheriff grabbed his gun and said, why'd you do it? And the judge said guilty in a make-believe trial, slapped the sheriff on the back with a smile, said, Papa, waiting at home, and I gotta get to it. That's the
You almost had it. You almost had it. You almost had it. You were there. You got something about Dixie. You were there, Pat. I can feel it. People were rooting for you. Okay.
Yeah, but sometimes you pick songs that weren't listened to unless they were on the car radio. So
well,
I don't know them that well.
There's one, you know, there's one... I'll give you another shot. You should know this one. I'm trying to get songs that you would know. You know. I'm not going to play the... I'm just going to... play this, because it's not a name that tune thing, but I want you to win those tickets. I really do. Two tickets, Pat, $938 million. Everybody's rooting for you. I know I am. I know I am. Are you ready? Because this is
okay.
The last one, then we'll get to our story. This is the last one. This is the last one. I'll give you a hint. Heaven. That's it. That was your hint. I can't say it anymore. Because you'll know, I already blow it. Here we go. This is the last one. Here we go. Mama, take this badge off of me. I can't use it anymore. It's getting dark, too dark to see. I feel I'm knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock,
knocking
on
heaven's door is the name of the song, isn't it?
Now, that is, because that's the name of that's too easy. Tell me the artist. For two tickets, tell me the artist.
Bob Dylan.
Ah, you did it. Good job. We'll be right back. Pat, you did it. Great job. We'll be right back. What our story?
You should have asked what movie was it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's a one of my,
yep, there you
one
go.
Of my old lovers.
Hey. That was not knocking on heaven's door.
Matt Garrett, Billy
that was not knocking on heaven's door.
Ask from that.
Bob Dylan.
That is.
You ever listen to Bob Dylan? You ever got an album with Bob Dylan? Pat?
He was my favorite.
He,
John
wasn't
said,
Bob Dylan,
do you know what movie that song was in?
Yes. It was a great movie. Do you remember the movie with Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid?
Yep.
It was that scene was the best scene in movie history, where she goes up. And, oh my God, I can remember this scene. Do you remember the scene at all? Where
I don't know.
They're walking.
I can't remember.
Yeah, that was a great scene. It was Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. What year was that? Had to be like 75 or something like that. If you ever get a chance to see it on YouTube, it's probably free because it's so old. One of the best ones, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. Mm-mm-mm. Dylan, or should I go, I'm Dylan. How many times must a man walk down? Does he talk like that, Pat, Shirley? How many times? Bob Dylan.
Well, he is a whiner.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? How many times must a man walk down before he becomes a man? What was that name of that song? What was that song? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yeah, there you go. There you go. Again, I want to thank Mr. Sheriff. The sheriff was in town. Sheriff came to town today. Sheriff came into the studio. Get the book, Manhunt, The Search for Vicky and Casey White. The good, the bad, the ugly is on paperback right now. And the guy's a good guy. I mean, my God, he's really good. On April 29, 2022, at 9:41 a.m., Vicky White, the assistant administrator and a 16-year veteran of the Lauderdale County Detention Center in Fort Lauderdale, Alabama, walked Casey White, no relation, a convict felon serving 75 years with the Alabama Department of Corrections. He was awaiting trial at the time. That's the sheriff. He was there. That's his story. I saw it on the news. That's right. I was honored that the sheriff came to town. I want to thank Robin for giving us some great guests coming in. We do have, there's going to be more guests coming in. We're going to have a financial person about you guys getting ripped off in your bank and how your fees and all that kind of thing, your financial fees. She's at risk management and some of the mistakes you make while you're doing your banking and how you do your banking and some of the scams that are going out there. She'll be on the show. We're going to have the profiler who does cold cases. She's going to be on the show. We have David. Where is David? We have David. David Bird's coming on the show. David Bird is the husband of, I think he's the husband of Holly. You guys remember Holly Million? Holly Million was on the show.
Yeah.
You like Holly Million. You remember her? You know, with the cleansing
yeah.
and everything? That's her husband. He has. He's going to be promoting, I guess, a book called Birds of a Feather. David Bird. That's going to be interesting. He's a band leader and a composer, a saxophonist, and a vocalist, and he's a Rasta man. Rasta man. That's the real deal, the Rasta man. You know, there's Jamaicans and there's Rastas. Rastas are like bad boy Jamaicans. They smoke the ganja. The ganja. The ganja man. They got the ganja man. They don't mess around. Here's some good stuff, Mom. Get away to that sissy stuff. He'll be on the show, and he's coming next week, April 6th. He's coming next week. He'll be on the show, and maybe Holly will be with him, and we can talk to Holly again. Maybe she'll be with him. So we have some great guests coming on pretty soon. That's right, only here on Brian the Hammer Jackson Show. We're back, baby. We used to do this a lot. We used to have great guests, really good guests, man. Ellen did a good job. Kelly did a great job, and Robin is taking over for where they left off, and she'll give us a good guess. It's been a while since I interviewed. I mean, it's been like 2 years since I interviewed. I got back into interviewing again. Okay, now you have to rate me. How did I do? How did I do, Patricia? How did I do?
Good.
Okay, good. Now, your drawing, your tickets are for next Saturday, March 30th. Wait. Oh, that's in 2 days. I'm going to give you a quick pick this time, unless you want to give me numbers.
Yeah.
What do you want it to?
Quick pick.
You don't want to give me numbers. All right. That's Saturday. $935 million. Do you have the $935 million ticket? I also got to get Laverne, because we forgot Laverne too, so I'm going to get her too. A quick pick. One of you may be the next millionaire. So anyway, what's going? Wouldn't that be good? And you wouldn't give me shit, right? I go, hey, you, Pat, you just won $935 million. Mind if can I borrow $10? got $10 you can borrow. let me see here. I know you have it. P. Diddy, baby, P. Diddy. If you're keeping up with the story, things are going to fall on this guy. It's already happening. Here we go. This is a rumor. P. Diddy, you guys know what's going on. P. Diddy's adult children reportedly had lasers pointed at them when the home was raided. Well, they said he had guns in there. They found one gun. His real name is Sean Combs. He goes by P. Diddy. He's found himself at the center of an intense investigation into claims of alleged sex trafficking. You know, let me tell you something. Sex trafficking got rid of the pimps. I like what the federal government did. We had, you know, prostitution is the oldest profession. And they used to call it prostitution, hooker, horse, whatever, right? But they got smart. They made it a federal offense. They said, we're not going to do this two-bit crap anymore. We're going to call it sex trafficking. So if you're a pimp, let's say you're an old pimp, and then you have your hoe working the street, you're sex trafficking now. That's a felony. You're no longer doing the hoe, you know, get the money, and you're a pimp. They got rid of the pimp. They got rid of the pimps because the pimps are going, shit, that's a felony, bitch. Where's my money? Oh, cops. So they got rid of the pimps. So it's going to be hard, right? So let's say if P. Diddy had a girl and he gave her to another producer, now he's a sex trafficker. That's sex trafficking. And sometimes you get congested on that highway. That's right. You don't want to be caught on the highway with the sex trafficking. It's nonstop. You can't get home. On March 25th, the federal authorities performed a raid on Diddy's home in Miami and Los Angeles, seizing the personal property, including computers and phone. More behind-the-scenes details have emerged after the raids, including the music. Mogul's adult children reportedly had lasers pointed at them when they exited the residence. Okay, get your hands up while we have that little red dot pointed at your forehead. When news of the raid on Diddy's home went viral on Monday, it was reported that two of his sons, 25-year-old King and 30-year-old Justin, were two. Who would name their kid King? Oh, I think we have a King. Sorry. King Webb. Yeah, okay. Never mind. Three people were handcuffed and temporarily detained by the Department of Homeland Security. Reports that the investigators, they yelled at the Homby house for occupants to come out with their hands up in the air. All right. This is the police department. You niggas got to come out with your hands up. And no tap dancing on the way out here. Keep your hands where I can see them. Get on out here right now. This is not CP time. Hurry up. Sometimes I hate myself.
Sometimes I do. Roger, 10-4, good buddy. We got ourselves. Damn. So, temporarily detained by the Department of Homeland Security officers. The LA Times now reports that the investigators yelled in the house, "Come on out with your hands up." Sean Combs were not present, but King and Justin Leslie later told their dad that officers pointed lasers at them as they emerged per their hand. Don't forget to point your lasers at them. It scares black people. Over. Copy that. Bring the laser out. The newspaper called the raid a major show of force that included dozens of agents, some of whom were reportedly heavily armed. Investigators searched both properties for several hours, with photos showing bags and boxes of potential evidence being taken. What's in that bag? I don't know. We got boxes. What's in the boxes? It's going to be evidence. I'm opening a box, and all it has is chicken wings and neck bones, and some ribs. That's racist shit. Over and out. Radio silence. I hate me. Just a second. Yes, yes. Is the therapist in? Yeah, she knows who I am, Brian. I think I'll... Do you have an open appointment in about a couple of hours? You do. Thank you. Get a show. Back to the show. Back to the show. The investigators searched both properties for several hours with photos showing bags and boxes of potential evidence being taken. The Los Angeles Times has source that says safe was emptied. Electronics were dismantled. The papers were strewn in some rooms of the mansion. Sean Combs were reportedly in Florida at the time of the raids, according to the paper, and has not been charged with anything. Not been charged with anything. He's not been charged with anything. Yet you got the SWAT over there. You got FBI over there. You got the police department over there. You even got the drug dog over there. Right, drug dog? Oof. I wonder how the drug dog sound. You know, your whole job is to sniff drugs. For 8 hours, you're sniffing drugs. And so how does a drug dog, like, woof, woof, I'm hungry, I got the munchies, I'm on the job, woof, excuse me while I lick my balls. Just a second.
You just have to, don't you?
Yeah. Yes, that appointment is available for my therapist. Yeah, you come on in, Brian. Thank you. Can you imagine your whole your whole job is to do drugs? That dog must be really freaking out at the end of the day. He's shaking and scratching his head. He must be. What's wrong with him? That's a drug dog. He's tweaking again. It says here. Yesterday, there was a gross overuse of military leave, a level force, as search warrants were executed at Mr. Combs' residence. This it was an ambush paired with an advanced coordinated media presence leads to a premature arrest of gentlemen of Mr. Combs and is nothing more than a witch hunt. Witch hunt. Where did I hear that before? Who says that a lot? Witch hunt. Huh.
You did.
No. Donald. Oh, yeah. Pat goes, another witch hunt. Pat goes, pack up, John. They found us. It's a witch hunt. All right, Pat. Come on out. Come on out. Come on, John. Get out of the room. We're going to fly away this time. It's a witch hunt. There has been no finding of criminal or civil liability with any of these allegations. That's true. That's true. That is true. That's a lot of force for an allegation. There was no evidence whatsoever. And I think this is going to be a problem. And you know who started this? His ex-wife. It wasn't because of semi, you know, one of these women, you know. One of these women reported it. You know, it was his ex-wife and these allegations. You know what I mean? That's a lot of force about that. Do
yeah.
you remember Honey Boo Boo? Do you remember the story with Honey Boo Boo? Do you remember that little TV show with Honey Boo Boo?
No.
It was a kid. It was a fat-ass kid. Well, it was a fat-ass kid named Honey Boo Boo, and it was a reality show here in the States. Well, I guess what happened? Mama June, her mother, who died? Oh, Anna who's Anna Cardwell? Well, one of the daughters must have died. Anna Cardwell must have died. She died at 29-year-old. She was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. Wow.
Oh my.
Wow, who knew? Yeah, reality TV star Mama June Shannon has rarely ever held back from getting candid about the dynamics of her family and any obstacles they may be facing at a given time. And that's been especially true over the past several months as her daughter, Anna Cardwell, battles stage 4 cancer. Shannon has kept the public updated on her daughter's health battle in that time, and sadly, she now confirmed that Cardwell has passed away at the age of 29 with that. Anna Cardwell, known affectionately as Chickadee, she passed away on the night of Saturday, December 9th. Mama June confirmed that information on an Instagram post she shared to her account Sunday afternoon. In a heartfelt post, which featured a photo of her family, June reflected on her daughter's cancer battle. It's tough when you go through a cancer battle, man. It says, she says, with the breaking heart, we are announcing that Anna Marie is no longer with us. She passed away in my home last night peacefully at 11:12 p.m. She gave one hell of a fight for 10 months. 10 months, only 10 months. Wow, 10 months. One hell of a fight for 10 months. She passed away with her family around her like she won't, and we won't be updating y'all with more. Information is, we won't be dating y'all anymore with information as we get it today. We love y'all and continue prayers and thoughts of our family during this difficult time. Mama June prayers, cancer sucks, hashtag cancer sucks, hashtag prayer, hashtag family. Wow. That's sad, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah. No,
I don't
watch reality shows, and I don't get them up here, not the States, you know.
Yeah, you're
not,
smart.
Not anymore.
Pat, were you diagnosed with cancer? Did you say that you
just
were diagnosed with skin
cancer?
Are you under treatment for it?
Yeah.
I'm not
going
to get
personal.
Oh, you had the surgery. Okay.
Did they tell you a small one, my forehead.
Oh, okay. Did they tell you what stage
you
were at the time?
Don't line up.
Your wrinkles don't line up. Okay. Wow. $935 million will straighten out those wrinkles. Wow. Wow. Did they tell you what stage you were at, or you don't know? It was just, you know, you don't know.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't serious yet. It was just.
It wasn't
just,
serious.
Apparently. I'll know soon. If there's more to it.
Oh, do you have to? You have to go back and whatever. I'm glad you're here, Pat. I'm glad you're here.
Oh, so am I, I guess.
I know, I guess. Wow. Knowing you, you're going to come back anyway. I'm back. Uh-oh, Pat's back. Pat doesn't know she's dead. Hi, everybody, I'm back. Pat, we can see through you. What?
I'm already back.
Yeah. I'm back. Look, I can go through walls. Yes, Pat, you can go through walls now. Wow. Well, that's what's going on. And they implicated Cuba Jr. in one of his things, and Usher, what's the story about Usher? And they should leave Usher alone. Leave poor Usher alone. I'm going to see if there's any news on Usher. I'm going to see if there's any news on Usher. Usher said he was crazy and wild living with Sean Diddy Dome. Uh-oh. He was crazy and wild. Crazy and wild, Pat. That reminds me of a song. Do you know the song?
No.
Pat, two more tickets if you name the song. Two. You know, in fact, let's see if you're a gambler. Double or nothing. You can get four tickets, four chances to win 900 and something million, or risk it all, and you know the song. It's an easy song. It's an easy song. I'll give you a hint.
Oh, crap.
I'll give you a hint. Kitty. I'll give you a hint. Kitty. Kitty. Mr. Fred is your hint. Mr. Fred's your hint.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Do it, Pat.
I can't.
Double or nothing, Pat. You don't want to do it. Double or nothing, four tickets. Here it goes, Pat. This is it. Come on.
Pat. No, I can't think of anything that goes with Kitty.
Kitty, think of Mr. Fred. That's the artist. Are you going to do it? I'll give you the lyrics. You'll know it.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. Double or nothing. I like how you have that courage. Good for you, Pat. Good for you. Good for you. You know the song.
I don't know if it's...
Think of Mr. Fred.
Stupidity. Yeah, okay.
think of Mr. Fred. Here's the lyrics. Now that I lost everything to you, you say you want to start something new, and it's breaking my heart you're leaving. Baby, I'm grieving. But if you want to leave, take good care. Hope you have a lot of nice things to wear.
Some good friends out there.
Yeah, but then a lot of nice things turn bad out there. Oh, baby, baby.
Yeah.
Come on. Come on.
It's a wild world. It's a wild world.
There you go. And who sings it? Who sings it? Think of Mr. Fred.
Who sings it?
Think of Mr. Fred.
Wild world.
Oh, baby, baby, it's a wild world. And
yeah,
hard to get by is upon a smile. Cat Stevens. Cat, Mr. Fred. Cat.
Oh,
Cat
Stevens.
Stevens.
Oh, I forgot about him.
That's what I say. Think of Mr. Fred. Cat Stevens. We'll be right back with a little bit more. We're going to say goodbye when we come back. If you want to come to the studio and say what a great interview that was, great. You might even win a book because I'm going to buy his book. I'm going to buy his book. I might even give it as a giveaway to get more people to come in. He's a great guy. The sheriff, Rick Singleton, was on the studio. 319-527-6099. That's the number to get into the studio. Oh, babe. Come on, Pat. Sing this with me. Now that I lost everything to you, there you go. You say you want to start something new, and it's breaking my heart, you're leaving. Baby, I'm grieving, but if you want to leave, take good care. Hope you have a lot of nice things to wear, but then a lot of nice things turn bad out there. Oh, baby, baby, it's a wild world. And it's hard to get by just upon a smile. Pat, you did it. You did it, Pat. If you want to leave, take good
just
care.
A minute, Brian.
And this is garbage.
Okay.
Thank you so much. You have a wonderful weekend, okay?
You too.
Thank you.
Now that I've lost it. say you want to start something new, and it's breaking my heart you're leaving. Baby, I'm grieving, but if you want to leave, take good care. Hope you have a lot of nice things to wear, but then a lot of nice things turn bad out there.
Yeah, things trigger me. Let's go back to Usher. Here's what happened. You guys remember Usher? Pat, you know who Usher is, don't you?
Oh yeah.
Do you really?
I'm not familiar with any of his music.
Really?
I'm not familiar with his music.
Well, it's not a guy at the theater with a flashlight. You know that. That's not what we're talking about, right? Not a guy taking your tickets or anything, right? It's a singer.
I know. Uh-uh. I know who he is.
Okay. Don't give him. Look at you get it all. Remember, this is one of my favorite Usher songs. Here's one of my favorite Usher songs. Yeah, it's called Yeah, and that's one of my favorite. Here it is, just a little bit. Usher, baby. Usher. This song is called Yeah, if you didn't know it. So anyway, going back to the story. You see, gather around, kids. I'm going to tell you a story. I got to tell you my creepy old man voice. Yeah, hello. Come on, kid, gather around. I'm going to tell you a story. It's a story about a nice boy. His name is, Usher. And Diddy. You know, Diddy Doody Diddy. Diddy. Diddy Daddle Diddy. Diddy. Diddy Combs, as a teen, what he did, what he hooked up with Usher. What I mean hook up. He was living with P. Diddy.
As a teen, Usher was living with Diddy. Here's how it happened in his career. Listen closely. See, Usher comments on living with Sean Diddy Combs. He resurfaced after the Combs home was raided in 2016. Yeah. Now, come on, kiddies. Gather around. Shh, I'm going to tell you a story. In 2016, Usher told Howard Stern that he lived with P. Diddy in the 90s to learn about the industry. What could go wrong, right, kids? Why do I have kids in my house? I don't even know, you little bastards. Usher was 14 or 15 then. He said it was wild that he was very curious about things. You know what I mean? Very curious. I remember when I was curious. That was my first joint. I smelled it. It didn't look like a cigarette. They told me it was a cigarette. I said, how could a cigarette be tied up at both ends? What do you light? How come you don't have a butt? They said, shut up and just smoke it. I smoked it. I've never been the same since. That's why I got the voice. It's a marijuana voice. Now, kids, Usher was 14, 15. And he said, it was wow, kids. Yeah. Usher comments on attending John Diddy Combs' puffy flavor cap. Now, I'm going to tell you something. If you're a grown man and you're a teenager and a grown man says, would you like to come to my puffy flavor camp? I'm not going to no puppy flavor camp. Nope. Not me.
Sounds suspicious.
It does, right? Some man goes, you want to come to my puppy flavor camp? No, I do not. I don't know what's going up in there. Well, that's what
like
he said.
You, little boy, I have candy.
Exactly. And you're the flavor. You're wild. Cherry, and I'm going to pop it. Pop, pop, pop. Just a second. Is that appointment in about a half an hour for my therapist? Good, I'll be there. Thank you. After reading these stories, I have to go to my therapist, Pat. The Department of Homeland Security searched Combs' Los Angeles, Miami property, citing unnamed law enforcement sources said it was part of a sex trafficking investigation. Okay. Combs has not been charged. He has denied any wrongdoing and said the raid was excessive. Combs is separately facing four civil lawsuits, allegedly sexual abuse and sex trafficking. Claims he has denied. What are the lawsuits? Here we go. This is, gather around, kids. It's a creepy guy again. I'm going to tell you a story. And those of you who went to Puppy's Flavor Camp, seek help in therapy. A timeline of the mounting sexual misconduct. Here we go. Against P. Diddy. Sean P. Diddy comes is facing four civil lawsuits with sexual misconduct. His Los Angeles, we already know that. What are they? Homes belong to Sean Diddy. We already know that. In the statement, we already know that. A cascade of sexual assault allegations have been levied against Combs in recent months, including in November 16, complaint from his ex-girlfriend. See, da-da-da-da. See, there you go. I think he's got to...
That's silly.
See, yes, Pat, you know, I'm thinking he's going to be innocent because, come on, ex-girlfriend, come on. Law and order here. What we really need is Sheriff Rick Singleton to bring this case. He'll get to the bottom of this. Ex-girlfriend, really?
Well,
right.
My question always is, Brian, why did the girl stay after the first event?
Right. I mean,
and do we really have sympathy if they stay?
Right. I remember I was just dating Cindy. Your exes are not good. I was dating Cindy, and Cindy came from Oregon. She came to Los Angeles, and I wanted to. I was in the neighborhood. I was showing her around. And then my ex-girlfriend lived over here. And
Cindy goes, "Is this where your ex-girlfriend is?" And I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, you know, I like to hear what your ex-girlfriend has to say about you." I said, "Well, they're not going to say anything good about you." I guess she wants to find out what's going on in my cuckoo's nest. So I knock on the door. She peeks out the window. And she has like a whistle. She opens the door. "I'm going to call the cops. I haven't seen you in 5 years, bitch." Cindy goes, "Oh, my. This is my ex." She came out. We started talking. Of course, they gave her a car and everything. And I got to introduce her to Cindy. And she goes, "Hi." And Cindy goes, "Hi." And I go, "This is so-and-so." And she goes, "Oh. So does he fuck you on the couch like he fucked me?" I go, "No, we haven't used the couch yet. We're still in the bedroom." I said, "This is not going well. This is not going well." Yeah, I know about the. My point is, exes are not going to give you a good review. No, there was no ex in the world going to give you a good review. None. And if you find an ex that's going to give you a good review, you're gay. "Oh, he's a nice boy. He didn't touch me at all. I didn't know he was gay till 5 years later because he didn't even touch me. Because he's gay." So here we go. So his ex-girlfriend, Cassandra Cassie Ventura, most recently from producer Rodney Jones Jr., also known as Little Rod. Little Rod? Really? Who would go by Little Rod? Why don't you just go by Little Dick?
I don't know.
Little Rod. Meet Little. They found her and her producer, Rodney. They were the one who had filed this report. It was a lawsuit. They didn't go. It was a lawsuit against them. So they went to criminal court in Manhattan Federal Court on February 26th. Here's the timeline of the sexual assault allegations that he's facing. Here's the timeline. November 16th. Should I do the crazy voice? The weird voice? Get the red. It's November 16th, 2023. Ventura files the first lawsuit. This is going to be good. Yeah, that's right. In the lawsuit filed in Manhattan federal court and seen by Business Insider, Ventura, the woman, ex, she accused Combs of years, and you hit the nail on the head, Pat. You said, why didn't you leave the first time? She said years, plural, years of physical abuse. Years of it.
So why did
years
she stay? Why did she stay?
I don't know. See, we're going to get into this, and this is going to be whoa. Years of physical abuse. Let me tell you something. And then I read somewhere where the kids were saying that they told them to come out with their hands up, and they had that beam on their head. They didn't do that to Trump. They didn't do it to all those Trump people that they arrested at the house. They didn't put the laser beam on their forehead and tell them to come out when they hit the documents. They didn't do it. But to these black kids living in this area, they had SWAT. If you saw on TV, there was SWAT, FBI, cops everywhere raiding your house for what allegations? Come on, man. We're going to get right to the story. We're going to get right to the bottom of this. Come on. Really? Come on. Pat, are you with me? What do you think, Pat? This is kind of suspicious, don't you think?
I think it's silly for anybody to stay past the first bad event.
Exactly. It was like the old joke. It's like the girl comes to me with a black eye, and I said, and I asked the guy, her boyfriend, how did she get the black eye? He goes, well, I told her something. I go, yeah? He goes, yeah, I told her something, so that's how she got the black eye. And then she has another black eye. I go, how did she get the other black eye? I had to tell her again.
Gee whiz.
Just a second. You sure you have room for me, my therapist? Yes, Brian. Yeah, I need to get in an emergency. Okay, I'll be there in 20 minutes. Do I get a cookie? Yes, you do. Okay. Radio silence. I had to call my therapist. You didn't laugh at my dog one, so I figured you'd laugh at sexual violence. I'll give you another joke. Want to hear another joke? See, I don't tell good jokes. I don't. People don't laugh at it. I'll give you another one. How come? Let's see if you laugh. How come Barbie can't get pregnant? How come Barbie can't get pregnant?
I don't know.
Because Ken comes in a box.
Oh, gee whiz, you told me this before and I forgot it.
It's always a gift that Ken comes in a box. Oh, what a good one.
That really entertains you, doesn't it?
It does. It makes me laugh. It makes me laugh because it's so stupid. It makes me laugh. So, so Ventura said in a statement that she was speaking up before the expiration of the New York Adult Survivors Act. Okay, here's what the New York Adult Survivor Act is. There's usually a stipulation about how long a case can go or allegation can go before they throw it out. So New York got a new law saying it could go on. It could go on. And I guess they give it a year, something like a year. Here, let me tell you what it is. This is better. Let me tell you what it is. Here's the New York law. This is a New York law. Let sexual assault survivors file for new lawsuits even if the statute of limitation has expired. A new New York law lets survivors of sexual assault file new lawsuits regardless of how far in the past the abuse occurred. The Adult Survivors Act went into effect on Thursday, giving survivors a one-year window to file civil suits. It's like E. Jean Carroll, who says former President Donald Trump raped her in the 1990s, sued him for defamation on Thursday. So meaning that, long story short, there is no limitations anymore. There's no statute of limitations. None. None. Here's P. Diddy on Howard Stern Show. Listen to this.
I moved to New York City, and I lived with Sean Puffy Combs for a year.
That's the crazy thing. Now, that was L.A. Reid's idea, right? We're sending
New
you over
York
to
City.
Something called Puffy Flavor Camp.
There you go.
To learn
Flavor
some,
Camp.
Yeah,
Flavor
that's
camp.
What it was called. And you're going to go to Puff Daddy's. He's
in the 90s. Do you understand what that's like?
Puffy's place was like just filled with chicks and orgying like nonstop, right?
No, not really.
But
it was curious. I got a chance to see some things.
Yeah, but you were 13. What were you seeing?
I went there to see the lifestyle.
Right.
And I saw it. But I don't know if I could indulge and understand what I was even looking at. It was pretty wild. It was,
so nobody tried to, you know, some woman didn't come along.
I didn't say that. What I did say is that there were very curious things taking place.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't necessarily understand it.
Uh-huh.
Biggie Smalls was there.
Lil' Kim, Craig Mack.
All these people are hanging around.
Yeah, man. Faith Evans. Jody
and your
Mary
okay.
J. Blige. They ain't know nothing about this shit.
Oh.
I was having a good time. You know what I mean?
Does he have you doing any chores? Are you doing dishes at all? I mean, to keep you humble somewhat? Or are you just like, can you stay up till 4 in the morning with them and party?
I mean, I could.
Yeah.
I actually stayed up longer than them.
And do you have money? What's going on?
I mean, I had like per diem. I had like a living. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
14 years old. You're a dad now. Would you ever send your kid to Puffy Camp?
Hell no.
See?
Yeah. There you go, Puffy Camp. We should get it. We should do it here. I need to get a Hammer Puffy Flavor Camp. Go to Hammer Flavor Camp. Hello. What do you think, Pat? There you go.
I don't know about that one.
Yeah, they'll love it. For the past 6 months, Mr. Cohn has been subjected to Ms. Ventura's persistent demand of $30 million. She's been demanding $30 million, Pat, under the threat of writing a damaging book about the relationship, which was unequivocally rejected as blatant blackmail. Tried to blackmail. See, you can't. Here's the first rule. You can't blackmail a black male. It's redundant. Thank you, Pat. You can't do it. The Business Insider reported that Douglas Wigdor, that's her lawyer, his ex-lawyer, said Combs offered Ventura an eight-figure sum to prevent her from speaking out before the suit was filed. Now, let me tell you something. just because he's trying to squash this doesn't mean he's guilty. He doesn't want the bad press. Now, let me ask you, Pat. You went out with John for over 20 years. Am I correct? Over 20 years. You're with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are some secrets you know about John that you can write a book. Am I correct? That John would be embarrassed. Okay, can John write a book about you over 20 years that you would be embarrassed that it would get out, that I would read it?
I don't get embarrassed easy.
Okay. But, you know,
I got over
it's coming
that.
Yeah, it's like, who gives a shit?
I got old brain. You don't care when you're old.
We don't care what you think. We got brain damage. Okay. Pat, stay with me.
Yeah.
It was $30 million under the threat of writing a book. And it was blackmail, he says. So she was the one who made these allegations. And they were married for like 11 years. Okay, he's a rock and roll thing. You heard Usher. What was going on there? Where they're under, there was one kid, there's one late girl I read. She was 17 years old. She said, but Puff Daddy repeatedly raped her at 17. And then it turned into a gang rape. And that was it. I mean, she was underage. I mean, that's what she claims. Now they're taking him to the civil court.
So why was she making herself, Brian? Why was she making herself accessible to these people?
Well, you know, he's an artist. He's, you know, he's a mogul, a business mogul. Maybe she wanted to be a singer, and you know, he wanted to get. He married her. She got what she wanted. It was cha-ching. If you divorce him, you're going to get half his shit. Cha-ching. And then you could write a book unless you sign one of those NDAs, which he did not sign. Well, here it is here. Here we go. It says, businesses that reported Jody Dickerson, Neil, one of the accused Combs of drugging her, sexually assaulting her, and videotaping the assault after a date in 1991. Dickerson said the incident caused her to become withdrawn and that she was diagnosed later with clinical depression and she dropped out of college. And she also said to the press, I was almost there. Just a second.
Almost what?
Hello. You know when women say, I was almost there after you have sex. I was, did you orgasm? I was almost there. I was almost there. Yeah, this is Brian again. Can I talk to my therapist? I'll be there soon. The other accuser who filed the suit without revealing her identity, I'm going to file a suit, but I'm not going to tell you who I am. Okay, that's fair. Said that Combs and R&B singer Aaron Hall sexually assaulted her and a friend after a music industry event in 1990 or 1991. When was 1990? We're at 2024. So what is that, 10 years? 10, 14 years, 15? Oh, 30 years?
30.
Yeah, you're right. 2000. You're right. It's over 20. It was over 33 years ago. 33 years ago.
Yeah.
No, he assaulted her. The suit said that Combs came to her home a few days later to silence them and choke the woman until she passed out. Knock, knock, knock. Hello, who is it? It's Puffy. Puffy? Puffy. All right, I'm going to open the door. Hi. That's her being choked. Thank you, Mr. Fred. He choked her. So I was doing the impression of she opened the door. As soon as she opened the door, you had both his hands around her neck, and that's the sound she made. Just a minute. She opened the door, and all of a sudden he choked her, and she was going, and last thing she was saying is,
okay. He's going to suffer and die real good.
Right. Until she passed out. A representative for Hall did not immediately respond to the request. A spokesperson for Combs told AB that Combs denied both allegations, said the women were exploiting the Adult Survivors Act. Both cases were pending of late February. That's what's going on here, kids. There has been other allegations going on with Puffy Daddy, Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, Diddy Combs. Right now, I'm thinking this is a witch hunt, and we're trying to catch our witch. Right now, Puff Daddy stepped down from his company as chairman. Rolling Stones reported on December 3rd, the Hulu canceled an upcoming reality show project based on Combs and his family called Diddy Plus 7. Rolling Stones also said 23 band severed ties with Combs, marketplace for black-owned businesses. Now, this is what happened all because of an allegation. He lost a show on Hulu. They canceled his show. He canceled, the Rolling Stones said 23 bands severed ties with Combs, and he lost his place in a black marketplace of his own business, and he had to leave, and he stepped down as chairman of a company or a business. December 6, 2023, a woman accused Combs and two other men of raping her when she was 17. I told you about that. The woman, who also filed the suit, anonymously alleged that Combs, his longtime producer partner, Har Pierre, and an unnamed third man, sex trafficked and gang raped her in 2003 when she was 17, according to reports. The lawsuit said Pierce flew the women to Combs' studio in New York, where they gave her drugs and alcohol until she was too inebriated to consent. While at the studio, Ms. Doe was gang raped by Mr. Combs. The third assailant was Mr. Pierre, and in that order, the suit says. The suit also included photos of the accuser with her face blurred in the New York studio. Combs denied the allegation again.
Well, as John just said, the groupies are fighting back.
Yeah, they are. And they're cashing in.
They want to be there.
They're cashing in. And you know what? Exactly. And this, and again, this, when she's probably about 40 now. I mean, she didn't come forward, but these are allegations. And there you go. See, let me tell you something. I don't really feel, and I go on, but we're going to end the show. I'm saying these guys deserve it. I'm going to go on a limb. I'm saying that these women are accusing these men. I understand. They're accusing these men for money. I understand. Should they get it? Yes, because the men are stupid enough to be put in that situation. If you're dumb enough to be put in that situation and you think you can get away with shit and you know what kind of world this is, you deserve to get your ass kicked. You deserve to lose money because you put yourself in that situation. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
But there's the other side to the story. These girls were taking advantage of these men.
That's true. Wait a minute, before we go, I want to thank, we only got a minute left. I want to thank, did you like the interview? I want to thank Sheriff Rick Singleton's new book, Manhunt, The Search for Vicky and Casey White, is now on sale on Amazon. He was just on the show. You can replay the show. You can hit us into the interview. It's a great interview. I want to thank Mr. Sheriff Singleton for coming in the studio today. Get the book, Manhunt, to search for Vicky and Casey White. Pat also has a business, and we don't talk about it because she's humble, but we play with her a lot. She is a good psychic. I know Pat for over the years, and she's pretty good. She's very accurate. I always say she's 75% accurate. The 25% is you better not say anything because she'll shrink your head. But she's pretty good. She's pretty good.
Because you changed the outcome, Brian.
That's true. Hey, you got your song. You got four tickets, kiddo. We'll give you the quick pick.
Oh, good.
You could be a millionaire. I want to thank everybody for coming in. Pat, we did it. It was just, this is the first time me and you did the whole show. We did the whole show, just me and you. Just me and you.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Well, we did have the sheriff.
Yeah, so, we had the sheriff.
That helped.
I shot the sheriff, but I did not kill the deputy. I'm going to therapy. He was a great interview. Robin apologized that she could not be here for the interview. She's not feeling well. But I hope I did you proud, Robin. I'm really glad. I'm really glad that you got some great guests coming in. All right, I'm going to leave you with this song. And I want to thank the lovely Patricia, who will soon become a multimillionaire, and I could borrow 10 bucks from her. I want to thank John, our special guest. And I want to thank Mr. Fred, our favorite guest. He's our studio cat. We keep Mr. Fred in the studio all the time, and he takes care of the cat. He's like our wet watch cat. If you come in the studio, Mr. Fred will scratch your face up. Don't mess with Mr. Fred. Mm-mm.
I didn't tell you about the other day, Brian.
Huh?
He attacked me. Really good.
Oh, he did? Wow.
I almost needed stitches. Yeah.
You know what's funny?
It was a mess.
You know what's funny? Pat, I can tell when a person has a cat. If you have a cat, you're going to come with some scratches. You're going to have scratches on your leg or on your – you're going to have them. You know, I never met a cat owner that did not have scratches on them. You know. They'll tell you. They'll point them out. Oh, he scratched me here and he scratched me here. I see scratches on the leg. I told you I had a cat. I had a psycho cat. I got him from the shelter. His name was Tyrone. Really quick story. I already told the story. Brought the cat home. He was a tabby. I never had a cat before. I'm a dog person. I'm sitting there and I'm saying, okay, cat. And the cat ate the food. He sat there. I'm going to bed. And he's just sat and watching me. I go, this cat is strange. I closed my eyes and I woke and I opened my eyes and the cat was just staring at me. He didn't blink or nothing. He was just staring at me. I go, he's freaking me out. You're freaking me out, cat. He didn't even blink. He's just staring at me with those big green eyes. I'm going, I'm freaked out. I decided to go to sleep. I closed my eyes. Swear to God. Because he just stares at me. He's thinking about me. He's finding out what my weakness is so he can attack me. And he got claws. And this is what I'm thinking. And so I go to sleep. I'm not kidding you. I hand to God. God, Jesus touched my hand. This is the truth. This cat, I go to sleep. This cat, I start sneaking around my head. I'm asleep, though. And then he gets above my head on the bed, on the pillow, and he starts batting my face with his paw. And then he runs. I woke up going, what the hell? And then he's just sitting there looking at me going, meow. I go, what the hell? He did this four times. He waited till I was asleep four times. And I kind of think, I'm asleep, I'm really tired. And then he'll get both his paws, bat, 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 bat. He didn't scratch me. He just batted me with his pads of his feet. And then he ran back into the corner, and he looked at me like, meow. I said, you are psycho. You're psycho.
Brian,
you're a crazy cat. True story. Crazy cat.
Brian, cat wasn't trying to attack.
That's what he just batted me. He didn't scratch me. He batted me, and then he ran away. And it's almost like I heard him laugh one time. No, that was Michael Jackson, maybe. But anyway, I heard, and he just sat there. He was playing with me. It was really sad because I met this other girl. I couldn't have cat anymore. I couldn't sleep because I was afraid to close my eyes. I put him in the bathroom, and he started meow, meow, scratch, scratch, meow. And I put him out of the bathroom. I took him over to this other girl that I was banging, and I said, you know, can you take my cat? And she goes, yeah. She calls me later. She goes, it was so sad. I go, why? The cat was searching for you and meowing and looking all the rooms for you, and he was just meowing his head off. Yeah, he was looking for you. I guess he was playing with me. He liked me. I named him Ty, but he was looking for me. Wasn't that sad? That's sad.
Yeah.
Sad.
Yeah.
But I couldn't handle it. I thought he was going to scratch my head off. And looking at me with those eyes, he didn't even blink.
Fred would scare the shit out of you then.
He would. He really would. They don't blink. One time I just tried to go, okay, I'm going to stare at you, see how you like it. Cat don't blink. They just look at you. Like, shit, they're not moving. What's going on in that cat again?
Have you looked at Fred's eyes? He doesn't have hooded eyes. He's got bright open eyes.
That would scare the shit out of me. That would scare me. No kidding. That would. Cats kind of bother me. Well, Thank you for the show. Thank you, Pat, for being my co-host today. That's Pat Oberline, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Pat. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
We'll see you tomorrow. Pat just won 4 tickets to the dance. Millionaire dance. We'll be see you tomorrow.
Send me quick pick numbers later.
I will. I'm going to get them tomorrow.
Okay.
What's today? Today's Thursday. What's the drawing? The drawing's Friday, isn't it? I thought it was Friday. I think it was Friday.
That's
it's a
tomorrow
Friday. No, it's Friday, isn't it? Let me see.
No, it's Thursday today.
Is today Thursday? Shit. Let me
yes,
see. That'll be tickets. Let me see when the drawing is. 930. Saturday. Saturday, March 30th. That's when the drawing is. That's when it is.
Okay.
So I'll get them tomorrow.
Well,
and I'll get them tomorrow, so I'll put the numbers. I'll get them. I'm going to get you, and I'm going to get Laverne, and I'll put the numbers in. I'll put the numbers in for you tomorrow.
Brian.
Yes.
Do one for everybody.
They're not here.
Oh, okay.
Only you are here. They have to be in the studio because, remember, we're giving away prizes in the studio. We gave away thousands of dollars, and we're giving away tickets. But Laverne's here in spirit. I know she is. Here you go. I'm going to end the song with this. Thank you, Pat, and thank you, John. Thank you, Mr. Fred, and thank you, Pat, Mr. Singleton, Sheriff Singleton. This is a song for you. That's it for the show. See you guys tomorrow. Great show. I'm out of the studio, by the way. It's like, hey, guys, time to go home. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. You have to go home now. I'm not in the studio. I haven't heard Blog Talk say goodbye, so goodbye. See you later. Bye-bye. So long. Have a good night. Ta-ta. Adios. Sayonara. Later. Goodbye.